This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 16th of February 2023. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 16th of February 2023. Your readers today are John Richards.
Hello.
Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And we're very pleased to welcome as a guest reader, a reporter from the Hampshire Chronicle, Matt Rooks-Taylor.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: major setback for park campaigners, it's light fantastic in Abbey Gardens, and Hampshire firefighters deployed to Turkey. So we start with the headline behind the first headline.
Major setback for park campaigners. Winchester campaigners have been dealt a blow after a judicial review appeal was rejected. The Friends of River Park group has been battling plans by Winchester City Council to dispose of part of River Park and the River Park Leisure Centre to Southampton University. They argue that the whole park was given in trust to the people of Winchester in the early 20th century and should not be sold to a private institution. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, made the announcement at the Cabinet meeting last Thursday. Councillor Todd said, "Lord Justice Lewison rejected permission to appeal to the applicants, rejecting the accuracy and legality of all the claims made. So now, after the rejection of the applicant's case by three separate judges on three separate occasions, the judicial review process relating to the former leisure centre is now at an end. Lord Lewison ruled that the case had so little prospect of success that it was not worth the Court of Appeal's time to even hear it. His ruling makes clear the processes the council has put in place since the very beginning of the project to protect both the green space and the public interest are real and substantial, and not as described by the applicants. The good news is that this now unblocks the project and we can move forward to the consultation process." He added, "We remain absolutely committed that this project will deliver on both of those priorities." Rose Burns, on behalf of Friends of River Park, said, "The attempt by Friends of River Park, with considerable public backing, financial and otherwise, to challenge the council's decision to dispose of land that was acquired over 100 years ago, specifically for public recreation, has been turned down by a judge before it could get to judicial review. That judge believes the council's promises when their barrister says it will behave properly and not flout the law, as he acknowledges it did when it first failed to advertise the sale. As a result of the Friends' legal challenge, the council has committed in court and in writing to act lawfully from now on." Ms. Burns said they hoped Councillor Todd would stay true to his promises to protect the environment and to act quickly. She urged people to join the group by going to justgiving.com/crowdfunding/friends of River Park. I'll read that again because that wasn't very clear. This website is justgiving.com/crowdfunding/friends of River Park. River Park Leisure Centre opened in 1974, replacing the swimming pools at the Lido on Worthy Road and the open-air river-fed pool in Garnier Road, St Cross. The centre was rebuilt after a devastating fire in 1987. It became redundant following the opening of the new centre at Bar End in May 2021. The agreement between the City Council and Southampton University stems from the academic institution's desire to expand in Winchester and the relocation at River Park next to its School of Art campus in Park Avenue. It recently opened a new facility at the Guildhall on the Broadway.
It's light fantastic in Abbey Gardens. A Winchester park has been transformed with beautiful lights as part of the season of light. Abbey Gardens in Winchester has become an enchanted light garden with displays of light-up tunnels, fairy tale creatures and flowery delights. The three-week display forms part of the season of light, culminating in Winchester Cathedral's Lux Muralis event, The Elements. This weekend, free interactive entertainment will also take place as walkabout artists perform throughout the late afternoon and early evenings. The final show within the cathedral will be conveyed through artistic interpretations, sound and light, enabling visitors to witness volcanoes, be immersed in the sky, and experience the power of the oceans, storms, and great stories linked to water. After an open procurement process, Ichthys Event Solutions Limited, who ran lights in the city in 2022 and organised Winchester's Christmas lights, were appointed to lead the way. The festival will run until March the 5th. And there's a lovely picture with three children standing under a very floral, brightly lit arch as part of a whole series of arches through Abbey Gardens, thoroughly enjoying the enchanted light garden.
Hampshire firefighters deployed to Turkey. A team of firefighters from Hampshire have joined the search and rescue team in Turkey, helping to rescue survivors who have been trapped in the rubble for days. Nine specialist firefighters from Hampshire were deployed in Turkey on Tuesday, February the 7th, teaming up with 13 other UK fire and rescue services following a major earthquake in Turkey on Monday, February the 6th. The country's fire and rescue team has set up a base of operations at Hatay Stadium and has been aiding the search and rescue operation in and around Antakya. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Rescue Service posted on Facebook, "Members of our incredible urban search and rescue team have been working tirelessly in the Republic of Turkey. They're part of a team of 77 specialist firefighters from 13 other UK fire and rescue services. They were deployed to help following Monday's earthquake. Despite the scenes of devastation, they've helped rescue people who had been trapped for days." And there's a picture of the fire and rescue team dressed in orange in Turkey.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Brockway, Brendan Brockway, on the 5th of February, aged 78. Clark, Malcolm Babington Clark, on the 4th of February, at Alton Community Hospital, aged 83. Dangerfield, Andrew Michael Dangerfield, at home on the 11th of January, aged 69. Diverall, Edith, known as Edie Diverall, on the 25th of January, aged 98. Douglas, Cecily Ellen Douglas, née Hobbs, aged at Brackenlea Care Home, Shawford, on the 31st of January, aged 92. Edwards, Brian Edwards, at Frimley Park Hospital, on the 8th of February, aged 89. Fairweather, Angela Elizabeth Fairweather, at Carleen Care Home, on the 12th of January, aged 84. Ford, Josie Maria Ford, at home on the 5th of February, aged 88. Gaysford, at Madeleine Alice Edith Gaysford, at Willow Court, Andover, on the 1st of February, aged 99. Hodgson. Anne Hodgson, at home on the 6th of February, aged 95. Kelly, Annabel Kelly, at home on the 31st of December, aged 56. Muffet, Ruth Muffet, née Hillier, on the 31st of January, aged 84. Ponting, Colin David Ponting, at home on the 3rd of February, aged 82. Radcliffe, Judith Dawson Radcliffe, on the 10th of February, at St Michael's Hospice, Harrogate, aged 84. Sankey, Eileen Joan Sankey, on the 5th of February, aged 88. Shepherd, Paul Shepherd, on the 10th of February, aged 69. Sleet, Leonard Ivor Sleet, on the 1st of February, aged 82. Watts, Terence John, known as Terry Watts, at home on the 4th of February. Next, we have Christian Comment,
which this week, and for the final time, and you'll understand when I read it, this is from Liz Tatham, and she's headed it, Final Thoughts on My Journey Home. 7 years ago, I was on retreat, feeling bleak, a year after losing my daughter to suicide. "What do you want of me?" I shouted to God. I was surprised to hear a voice coming back saying, "I want you to do something small but very significant." Taken by surprise, I wondered what it was I could do. When I returned home, I found an email from Professor Mary Gray, who used to write this slot. She asked me if I could take it over. I agreed, and have written from my heart and my faith for you every 4 weeks ever since. 500 words is small, and the impact is significant. I know, because you tell me in so many comments and notes. Now I find myself in the same position. I have had to email someone from my church and ask them to take it over. Not because I have dried up or lost faith, but because my body has turned on me. I have experienced a very rapid onset of motor neurone disease, which has hit me and my family like a juggernaut. Writing is difficult, and I am weary and tired all the time. I have worked hard on the suicide prevention agenda and other aspects of people's suffering and bringing the healing love of Jesus to them, so inevitably wonder why I have been sent this to suffer. Triggered by the loss of my daughter, I turned my doctoral studies to the question of healing and suffering and found some answers, but now I feel that I could look anyone in the face who is lying entombed in a collapsed building in Turkey. At the beginning of this, just a few weeks ago, I lost God. I couldn't work it out at all and felt bewildered. Then suddenly I realized last week that he, or he as Jesus, was walking alongside me, carrying my stretcher along with others who I cannot see. I'm not sure where we are going on this stretcher journey. Home, I believe. I'm still not sure why we have to suffer, why it seems random and unfair, but this is my final lot, and I shall allow myself to be carried. I have no questions that have reasonable answers. This is shorter than usual, because I'm tired and my limbs ache after writing this. I wrote under my maiden name all these years to try and be anonymous, but many of you know who I am. I hope the exposure in this piece is acceptable, but I wanted to tell you that my faith is hammered through me, and I'm going to find that piece of the stable in Bethlehem that I wrote of so much. Join me there one day, and thank you for your prayers, comments and support. And those are the last words to appear in this chronicle by Liz Tatham.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we start with the we've got 8 letters this week on a variety of topics and all fairly lively. So we'll start off with the first one.
And this letter is from Edward Phillips and it's entitled Election Tactics. Sir, I agree with Mr. Smith in his excellent letter that the government is seeking the biggest change to how we vote in a generation, and that the country has hardly been prepared for this change. And that's from the Chronicle letters in February the 9th. My question is a more fundamental one. Why is this government making this change? In the 2019 election, there were only 33 allegations of impersonation out of 58 million votes cast. There is no evidence that voter fraud has ever changed an election result in this country. Why waste millions of pounds of taxpayers' money on making it harder to vote? Why not spend it on the real threats to our democracy? For example, in tackling the disinformation campaigns in social media, many from hostile foreign governments, and political advertisements from unattributed sources. The government's own research shows that those with severely limited disabilities, the unemployed, people without qualifications, and those who had never voted before were all less likely to hold any form of photo ID. Older people will have had several years to acquire photo ID and driving licences, passports and bus passes. The young are disadvantaged. Why has the Conservative government changed the rules? The tactics of the Republican Party in the USA in trying to exclude certain sections of the electorate unlikely to vote Republican provided an answer. Is this an attempt by the Conservatives to manipulate the votes in their favour? There is now a real danger that citizens will be turned away from the polling station, angry, frustrated and disenfranchised. And that's from Edward Phillips, Berwick Road, Berwick Way, Week in Winchester.
This one's from Roger Mallin and it's entitled It All Helps. Given our ultimate dependency on the environment for our survival, it should be foremost in our minds when all policies are implemented. Often no costs are incurred when making early positive contributions. As they say, every little counts. For example, take North Wales. I have often wondered why the 4 sets of traffic lights cannot be synchronised to work in sequence at 20 miles per hour. One is regularly forced to stop at all 4 lights, and apart from the inconvenience, there are the pollution issues. Stopping and starting 4 times must produce far more emissions than simply drifting downhill at 20 miles per hour, with little incentive to speed as one overruns the sequence. Plus, there are the added particles from the brake pads and tyres entering the atmosphere. Pedestrians would also benefit, especially at Park Avenue, where the pedestrian cycle is not that frequently used. Modern electronics make this synchronisation quite feasible, and other cities have done it for many years. This is only a minor issue in reducing pollution in the city centre, and there must be others. The ultimate solution would be a ring road, but that will not happen. What use saving Winchester if the world dies? As I said, every little helps in what I now consider to be a belated attempt to save the world. The cop-out delegates do not appear to get their heads around the urgency of the situation. Nearly every issue adversely affecting on the world is traceable back to global warming, plus the often ignored issue of overpopulation. Yet they only scratch the surface with good words and intentions. And that's from Roger Mallin and Goring Field, Takedown, Winchester.
This next letter, which is entitled Hats Off to Our Brilliant Buskers, is from Paul Hickey. I've been to many town centres in southern England, and only Winchester High Street has so many regular buskers. Most town centres have hardly any buskers. It is a joy to sit down and enjoy some of the buskers in Winchester High Street. It really brings the streets alive. You get great rhythm and blues guitarists, rock and roll bands, singer-songwriters, classical guitarists, jazz, folk, soul, etc. It's so nice to sit down with a coffee, a pasty or a pie, and enjoy the street musicians in Winchester High Street. The buskers create a really nice atmosphere in the High Street. Long may the buskers of Winchester High Street continue. Winchester, the busking capital of the world, writes Paul Hickey, Parchment Street, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Still Waiting, and it's from A. Barker. Great to read that the City Council has stumped up £45,000 for a 21-day light display to bring joy and happiness. And that was written in the Chronicle on February the 9th. Is it possible that the Council can now find the money and motivation to provide public seating in the King's Walk area for a similar sum, which will bring joy and happiness to all who visit the city to spend their money 365 days a year, particularly for those with mobility issues? For many years now, the Lib Dems have promised this facility, but continually fail to deliver. And that's from A. Barker, Berwick Close, Week in Winchester.
This next one's from Tim Loden, and it's entitled Draconian Step. I was shocked to read Paul Montgomery's letter, Cathedral Events, which announced that Winchester Cathedral will no longer allow concerts on Saturday evenings. That was in the Chronicle on February the 2nd. This is a draconian step and is made by a very senior cathedral, depriving many amateur musical groups of living out their dream of performing in the cathedral. Why? I was a chorister in Winchester Cathedral from 1947 to 1953. My mother was mayor of Winchester from 1958 to 1959, and my father spent all his working life as a GP in the city. And I kept up my association with the cathedral by singing with the Wainfleet Singers for 32 years. Back in the 50s, managing the cathedral, both spiritually and commercially, was the responsibility of the dean, assisted by a retired army officer with no commercial experience at all. Luckily, the cathedral survived until the post of Receiver General was created, thus relieving the Dean of his commercial responsibilities. I have been kept reasonably in touch with the cathedral affairs from several sources over the years, and the news became gradually worse as time went on, climaxing with the appointment of the last bishop. The cathedral has in residence one of the finest organists in the UK, whose accommodation has been downgraded to a dwelling unsuitable for his position. Are we about to lose him? So what is the cause of this threat to our great heritage of cathedral music? Such a fine cathedral should be an asset, not a liability. It was with some regret that my wife and I transferred our loyalty to Salisbury Cathedral, where everything seems to be positive and friendly. And that was from Tom Loden in Sutton Manor, Sutton Scotney.
Road Survey is the title of this letter from Mike Slynn, who is the chairman of King's Barton Residents Association. A recent article in your paper was supportive of the campaign to keep Andover Road open rather than diverting its traffic through King's Barton. But at the end of the article we read, it has been frequently pointed out that all residents should have been aware of the diversion plans. The King's Barton Residents Association Committee was unsure that this statement was correct, so we surveyed residents living on Winchester Avenue, the road onto which Andover Road traffic is planned to be diverted. We asked, before you moved into your home, were you made aware that Andover Road would be permanently closed and its traffic diverted past your home? The survey showed 32, that's 37%, for yes, I was made aware, and 54, 63%, for no, I was not made aware. Clearly, the reality is that most residents were not aware of the diversion plans before they moved in, and so our survey finds the statement in the article to be incorrect. Also, several of those who said, yes, I was made aware, also told us that Carlos staff had informed them that the diversion, quote, might not happen, or, quote, was unlikely to happen. That letter is from Mike Slynn, the chairman of Kings Barton Residents Association, Shenton Gardens, Kings Barton, Winchester.
Greenest ever, and this letter is from Peter Lydiard. I was very struck by the contrast between the headline in my daily paper, The Eye, since you ask, and the letter from Westminster in the Chronicle of 11th of February, penned by Flick Drummond MP. In her letter, Flick states that the government continues to be the greenest administration ever. In contrast, the headline in my daily paper was, Environment Agency forecasts only 6% of English rivers will be in good ecological condition by 2027. And that investment in the network was overshadowed by the £50 billion paid out to shareholders since privatisation in 1989. I wonder which of these statements is true. And that's from Peter Lydiard, Parchment Street in Winchester.
And this last one is entitled No Traffic Treat, and it's by Phil Gagg. Two items struck me in particular in your February the 9th edition. On page 2, you reported that Hampshire County Council might be increasing their council tax by almost 5% this year. On page 4, you reported that the County Council were intending to spend £1.4 million to bring Tunbridge on Garnier Road up to modern weight-bearing standards, so it will cope with the increased weight and volume of traffic and remain in serviceable condition over the next 100 years. It is great news that for 9 months this summer, Garnier Road will be closed to through motor traffic and remain open for cyclists, pedestrians and, no doubt, disability scooters. This will let us all enjoy the wetlands in all weathers, without the danger, noise and tailpipe emissions we usually have to put up with. It will be a rare opportunity to observe all the wildlife there, and even hear the birds singing. When Andover Road was closed for bridge works, it was crowded with residents taking their evening stroll, and a Garnier Road without traffic will prove an even greater attraction. It is bad news that this summer may well be the last opportunity for 100 years to enjoy the wetlands fully, and that Hampshire County Council is wasting money it cannot afford on something that will simply increase greenhouse gas emissions and diminish our extraordinary environment. Surely it would be better to restrict Garnier Road permanently to cyclists and pedestrians, and for Hampshire County Council to save their money for transport projects that make our lives better and healthier. At the very least, it would be helpful if Hampshire County Council could monitor over the closure the traffic-free route's popularity with cyclists and pedestrians, and measure the impact of the closure on neighbouring routes. We might well discover that Winchester is a better place without through traffic on Garnier Road, and decide not to reopen it. And that's from Phil Gagg, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
That concludes the letters. We next have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and then will be followed by a first person.
So the editorial comment, which is entitled this week, River Park Scheme All Set for Go Ahead, It looks like the end of the road for the Friends of River Park and the Campaigners' battle. The group was trying to stop the City Council disposing of the redundant leisure centre and some of the adjacent land to Southampton University, which proposes new buildings. The Friends argued that the land was secured for the people of the city more than 100 years for recreational purposes and not for a private institution such as a university. However, a senior judge at the High Court in London has rejected its application for a judicial review. This would appear to mean that disposal of the site to the university can go ahead, even if the Friends of River Park is still seeking funds on social media. It is important that it does go ahead. The danger is that Winchester will become seen as a place where nothing can get done. The city now has a long and embarrassing history of failed schemes such as Silver Hill and Station Approach, derailed by court challenges. The collapse of both schemes several years ago meant the council probably dodged a bullet of property white elephants, but that is no reason not to press on now with what looks like an exciting proposal.
And this article by Kimberly Barber is about the rise of AI in local news. One thing people keep asking me about in my role of editor is the growing use of AI in journalism. For those of you not up to date with tech, artificial intelligence-powered writing generators like ChatGPT have been released into the market and are blowing people away with how quickly and accurately they can write articles. Give it a subject, press a button, and within a few seconds you have an article. It's accurate. The grammar is correct. Everything is spelt right. And it's fast, faster than I could ever research and write an article. It draws in the wealth of knowledge accumulated on the internet and regurgitates it in a pleasant way. Sure, it lacks flair, as one of my past editors would have said, but it's not wrong. NewsQuest, the company that owns the Hampshire Chronicle, is tentatively exploring the use of AI. Some articles, for instance, our monthly updates of property prices that rely on a set of data and look at whether prices have gone up or down, are being written by AI. It's also helping to digitalise some parts of our business. For example, the death notices that appear each week in the printed version. It's helping us compile all the lovingly crafted notices into one article. It formats everything correctly and makes it look neat and tidy. No real skill is needed here. But what about the meatier articles? Lots of copywriters must be looking at this technology in horror. It can write a straightforward story based on facts and information online in seconds. Now, I'm pretty sure I can tell that it's written by AI, but what worries me is that can other people tell? And more importantly, do they care? When you're scrolling Facebook looking for a quick article to while away a few seconds, say a listicle like Top 10 Things to Do in Hampshire on a Saturday, does it matter that it's not been written by an actual person? Do we value humanity and personality over accuracy? Any human is bound to make a few errors. That's the very nature of who we are. And if there's anything that riles readers, it's the typo. So if we can get the computers to write the bulk and then we just glance over it, can it really replace actually humans as journalists? PricewaterhouseCooper predicts that 3% of jobs are already at risk from AI. By the mid-2030s, this proportion will jump to 30 to 44%. But what should local newspapers do about it? One thing local newspapers have never been very good at is embracing technology. Think eBay, etc. They rested on their laurels when others were charging forward confident that people would not turn away from printed products. And yet here we are in 2023 and you are statistically more likely to be reading this column on a mobile phone than any other medium. With AI, we need to be talking about its usage. How far do we allow it to go? We also need to be talking about it as a society. Where do we draw the line? We do let it write some reports, but what about when pupils at schools want to use it to write essays? When teachers use it to write teaching plans? When managers use it to write business plans? Honestly, it's never crossed my mind, boss. What about when police use it to write reports of incidents? When social workers use it to write reports that determine a child's fate? These are very real, possible applications for this technology. However, we do have one piece of protection to stop it from taking over completely. While AI may be able to come in and streamline writing, what it can't do is be present. Journalists need to be the ones at the scene, at the event, in the meeting, in the room. They need to be the ones who people invite, who people want to meet and talk to in person. Perhaps by freeing up the reporters from some of the lesser skilled tasks, like writing top 10 things to do in Hampshire on a Saturday, it means that they can be out in the community where it matters more. The Hampshire Chronicle has always been very good at being in the heart of the community, and that's where we intend to be for many years to come, albeit maybe with the help of a bot to write the boring bits.
There was no letter from Westminster this week. Just a few announcements and a few what's on items. This information may not get to you in time. If those who receive the memory stick on Saturday will should hear it. It's just to say that the Winchester 10-kilometre road race takes place this Sunday on the 19th. They're expecting around 2,000 people this year. It will start at Winchester Guildhall in the Broadway at 8:30 in the morning, and there will be road closures around until about 10:15. So it may affect you, but maybe not. And I say you may not get this information in time, but that's on. The Winchester Chamber Orchestra will be performing a concert suitable for children on Saturday, 4th of March, at the United Church in Jury Street. The traditional story of Three Little Pigs will be told by lively local author James McConaughey with full orchestral backing using a new arrangement of music from Beethoven's Second Symphony. There will be two performances, that's on Saturday, March the 4th, at 11 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. each lasting between 40 and 45 minutes, and tickets are £6 and can be booked online via the orchestra's website at Winchester Chamber Orchestra, that's all one word, at .org.uk. That's Winchester Chamber Orchestra .org.uk, and tickets may also be available at the door. Winchester Cathedral is offering touch tours for blind and partially sighted visitors. They will provide you with the history of the building and stories of some of those who worked there or were buried in the cathedral. There will be opportunities to touch building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various types of architecture of the cathedral, and also you'll be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasure. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. The tours will take over a little over an hour, and afterwards you will be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there are also many exhibits which you can touch. Tours, the next two tours are on Thursday the 2nd of March at 2:30 and Monday the 17th of April at 2:30 again. And then there will be further tours on Friday the 9th of June at 2:30 and Monday the 17th of July at 11:30. Further fixed dates, if you have a group of up to 3 visually impaired people who would like a tour on another date, this can be arranged. So to book these tours, which I say are 2nd of March, 17th of April, 9th of June, or 17th of July, you should telephone the Cathedral Visitor Services team on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Sunrise, Round now is about 7:15 in the morning and sunset is around 5:30 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Sharp hike in water bills. Southern Water has announced a hike in charges to help combat growing economic pressures. The company will be increasing its bills by almost 10% to keep in line with inflation. Dual service customers can expect an increase of 9.4% on their charges, with an average annual bill rising from £401 to £439. The company says this increase will help them to improve their performance and to assist more people in financial difficulty. Southern Water's Katie Taylor said, "Plans to increase tariffs are never taken lightly."
Pre-loved uniform shop helps keep costs down. A Winchester primary school has received a grant to set up a pre-loved uniform shop for families to access all year round. All Saints Church of England Primary School PTA, that's Parent Teachers Association, received the money from the Hampshire County Council Waste Prevention Community Grant Fund. The shop was set up by parent volunteers with support from the school, and its ethos is to save, reduce, reuse, recycle. I'll say that again, it's worth hearing again. Save, reduce, reuse, recycle. Families from the school community can donate pre-loved uniforms, school bags, coats and shoes, which are washed, stored and resold for a fraction of the cost of buying a new uniform. Since the shop's inception, the school has saved more than 150 kilograms of school uniforms from going to waste and has supported families with cost savings of more than £1,000. Using the grant fund, the PTA has been able to purchase storage and shelving for clothes and cover the cost of laundry detergent. So far, the shop has made nearly £400, with hopes that it should remain a self-sustaining service for years to come. Lead volunteer Denise said, "I am so proud to be part of this wonderful project and very grateful for the grant from Hampshire County Council. We have seen the difference that our pre-loved uniform shop has made to families, and we are teaching our children about the importance of waste prevention." Meanwhile, the head teacher of All Saints Church of England Primary School, Mrs. Jane Hall, said, "This is a wonderful initiative that supports both our children and families. We are delighted with the impact it has had and will continue to have in the future."
Winchester College staff vote for industrial action. Teachers at one of the oldest and most expensive boarding schools in the country have voted for industrial action in a row about an inferior package for new staff. Following a ballot by the National Education Union, teachers at Winchester College were awarded a 6.4% pay rise. However, this rise comes following months of negotiations between union members and the college. Despite this, the union remains in dispute over proposed changes to the Teachers' Pension Scheme, TPS. According to the union, Winchester College is currently proposing to close the scheme to new joiners from September 2023. Under a proposed phased withdrawal plan, existing staff would maintain their present rights, but teachers recruited in future would be put into a defined contribution scheme, which has no guaranteed level of benefit. The union argues that phasing out the current scheme for new joiners will leave their existing teacher members in the college at risk of the employer imposing a full withdrawal from the scheme in the future. A ballot of NEU members regarded pay and changes to the TPS closed on Tuesday, February the 2nd, with 82% voting for strike action on a turnout of 77%. A strike date has yet to be announced. NEU regional officer Nick Child said it's a shame that it was necessary to ballot for strike action at Winchester College to agree what our members believe to be a fair and reasonable pay rise in the context of the current rates of inflation. But we are very pleased that we have managed to do this without needing to resort to taking strike action. However, our members still feel very strongly about the unresolved threat to the teachers' pension scheme. Winchester College seem to believe that they can offer an inferior package to new colleagues and that our members would stand idly by as long as their own teams are protected, their own terms are protected. Winchester College is a world-famous independent boarding school for pupils aged 13 to 18, with a co-ed sixth form offering day places. Average fees were £45,936 per year. It ranked the college as the ninth most expensive boarding school in the UK. A college spokesperson said, "We are deeply disappointed by the announcement that teaching staff who are NEU members at Winchester College have voted in favour of taking industrial action. This is despite the school's best efforts to find a solution and in spite of its strong belief that no grounds for a dispute exist."
Itchen Valley Village Pub to reopen. The owners of a Hampshire County house have bought a pub in Eastham. The Chestnut Horse has been purchased by Avington Park after a plea from local residents. The Itchen Valley Pub has had a fairly checkered history after previous landlord, Andrew Caldwell, left in 2020. Nicholas Roche, chairman of the Nicholas James Group and owner of Avington Park, said, "During early 2021, Avington Park received a letter from some villagers in Easton asking if Avington Park would consider buying the Chestnut Horse. From there, the journey began. The brewery was contacted and an agreement was reached for the purchase of the pub. The pub is in need of some significant investment and positive feedback has been received from Winchester Council for the plans. A full planning application has now been submitted to provide up-to-date kitchen facilities and repairs to the building at the rear of the pub. The plans include a locals bar, an improved village shop, family-friendly menu, and it will be open for breakfast, lunch and dinner. The plan is to open the pub as soon as possible, following the works. A planning application has been submitted to the City Council and a website will be online soon to provide updates."
Council tax rise set for approval. Winchester civic chiefs agreed an increase to council tax to help fund the latest budget. The City Council's Cabinet discussed the budget at the meeting last Thursday, February the 9th. They agreed that Band D properties will pay £155.29, an increase of £4, and an average council tax increase of 2.65%. Most of People's Council tax bill comprises payments to Hampshire County Council. It is proposing a 4.99% rise, just below the maximum allowed for such authorities of 5%. Also, council tax for the special expenses in the Winchester town area at Band D will go up by 5.5% to £80.93, an increase of £4.22. The budget outlined six main areas of funding, and they are Greener Faster, £250,000, Future of Waste, £500,000, Pride in Place, £150,000, Digital Transformation, £400,000, Regeneration, £300,000, and Cost of Living and Living Well, £170,000. The Greener Faster area refers to the Council's target of becoming a carbon-neutral local authority by 2024 and the wider district to be carbon-neutral by 2030. The Future of Waste will see new services for food waste recycling collection in early 2025. Digital transformation is an improvement of online services, and regeneration refers to projects such as Central Winchester Regeneration. Other areas of the budget include increasing the Town Forum bus shelter replacement programme by £10,000 per year, also increasing the Tree Works budget by £78,000 per year. The Cabinet agreed to recommend a freeze to proposed grant funding reductions to the Hampshire Cultural Trust at a cost of £43,000 a year. Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "Local government finance is very complex. Carbon neutrality is the overarching target for the council. I strongly support this budget. In difficult times, we're in a much better position than other councils." Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith said, "I welcome the items on Pride of Place. We have started to turn this around. It's very sensible. Getting this fund in place is essential." Councillor Jackie Porter said, "We are committed to helping residents who can't cope with digital transformation. We don't want to exclude people." The Cabinet agreed to recommend the budget to full council, which meets on Thursday, February the 23rd.
MP raises fears over pharmacies. An MP has written to the Health Secretary asking him to address the pressure pharmacies are under due to fears for patient safety. Flick Drummond MP for Meon Valley wrote to Steve Barclay this week about the impact of a 30% real-term fall in funding over the last 8 years for pharmacies, which is causing them to cut back services and reduce opening hours. The MP regularly visits pharmacies across Meon Valley, who have also told her they are concerned about regulations. In the letter, she said, "I am concerned that if these pressures are left unaddressed, we could see many unplanned and permanent pharmacy closures in the near future. Those pharmacies which remain will not have sufficient resources to take on patients displaced by closures and place further pressure on the primary care network. It is also a concern that pharmacies are hampered by regulations which prevent them from planning their opening hours or being able to operate in the absence of a pharmacist. This is an issue which causes a lot of frustration in cases where patients are unable to collect prepared and packaged prescriptions because a pharmacist is temporarily out of the premises, including when they have simply gone for a break in their working day. I would also ask you to look at what can be done to maintain the pharmacy sector. These pressures could lead to rises in patient care and safety if risks to patient care and safety if left unchecked."
It's a dumping disgrace. A Kingsworthy resident has been left angry after a fly-tipping incident in Fraser Road. Karen McCleary found the large pile of rubbish at the back of a block of flats. She said, "It is a disgrace and so disrespectful to the people who live nearby and have to walk past it. This appears to be a regular fly tip, as there are frequent piles of rubbish which build up in the same spot. Who are these people and why are they getting away with it? Why should taxpayers foot the bill for the removal? I would be interested to know what the clear-up costs the local taxpayers and why it appears to be tolerated to the extent that it is regularly cleared. Surely identifying the culprits and prosecuting them would be a preferable solution." A Winchester City Council spokesman said, "We are aware of a fly-tipping incident in Kingsworthy. Our fly-tipping officer has identified witnesses and is currently assessing whether the evidence is sufficient to take the case forward to prosecution. Fly tipping will not be tolerated, and our team work hard to collect robust evidence for each incident that occurs. We actively encourage residents to report any person seen illegally fly tipping." In a report published by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs released earlier in the month, waste was dumped 1,732 times in the Winchester area last year, and there's a picture of a heap of rubbish, including a mattress, a sofa, and what looks like an oil drum.
Oof. Campaigners call on city to snub the hub. More than 150 people have signed a petition in opposition to plans for BT street hubs across the city centre. The five hubs will replace the more traditional phone boxes, which have been in the city for decades. As well as having device charging, free emergency calls and air quality monitoring, they will also have two adverts on each hub. George Prest, Lib Dem campaigner in St Michael Ward, said BT's plans have created a wave of ill feeling amongst shopkeepers and local residents. BT put in this planning application just before Christmas, when they hoped no one would be paying attention. These screens are nothing more than a Trojan horse to inflict digital advertising on the residents of Winchester and the city's thousands of annual visitors. Anyone who looks at the mock-ups that BT have submitted can see that these screens are ugly, will block pedestrian flow, waste valuable energy resources, and are out of keeping with our historic town centre. Listening to people on the high street and on social media, talking to shopkeepers and residents on the doorstep, it became apparent that these street hubs have aroused strong opposition, and we need a way of taking that feeling to the council. Nathan Eve, a Lib Dem campaigner from St Bartholomew, said, "This is yet another example of the corporisation of the high street, and in an age of hyper-connectivity, 5G and smartphones, even the technology that BT claims the street hubs will bring seems unnecessary and redundant. The street hubs are planned for 3 in Jury Street outside Mr So, 152 High Street outside Chococo, if that's how you say it, 125 High Street outside Vodafone, 108 to 109 High Street outside O2, and 71 St George's Street outside Primark." A BT spokesperson said, "We believe Winchester would benefit from the improved functionality offered by street hubs, including free ultra-fast Wi-Fi, rapid device charging, and the potential for enhanced mobile connectivity. Street hubs also take up less space on high streets than traditional payphones and can provide further benefits such as air quality monitoring for local authorities." On February the 9th, the plans had more than 100 objections. Paul Spencer, executive director of Winchester BID, also raised concerns. He said, "They will detract negatively from the historic street scene, and the LED advertising screens will have an adverse visual impact on the historic environment of the city centre."
Fairs hope to recruit volunteers. Volunteers are being urged to attend a series of fairs across the county. Not-for-profit Community First is hosting events in Fareham and Winchester, along with Havant and in Borden. It comes as the group sees an increase in demand for volunteers to help run food banks and home help. This is due to the cost of living crisis seeing more people asking for support. Tim Horton, Chief Executive of Community First, said, "The past year has demonstrated the vital role volunteers play in our local community. We have seen how people have pulled together to help those affected by the rising cost of living, and our challenge now is to harness this renewed motivation and not lose momentum. The organisations taking part in the volunteering fairs all deliver valuable services, and I hope that Hampshire residents who might be able to contribute their time and skills to supporting them will attend the fairs to learn more. The event in Winchester takes place at Winchester Baptist Church on the 28th of February.
Charity has walking trail hopes for old railway tracks. A charity is renewing its efforts to reopen part of an old railway line for walking and cycling. The Watercress Way trustees mark the 50th anniversary of the closure of the Alton to Winchester line, with a renewed effort to reopen that section of the line again for active travel. Tony Langridge, on behalf of all the trustees, has renewed contracts with landowners to ask again if they would open their land to allow the Watercress Way to run along the old track bed. Jackie Porter, Chair of Trustees, said, "Active Travel England has a new budget and a strong role in promoting travel other than by car." Having also received confirmation from the Historic Railways Estate telling us that the bridges along this route will not be infilled now, the Watercress Way is the perfect opportunity to be an active travel route. The old line, much of which is still clear to see, presents a unique chance to connect communities by foot or bike. It presents a great opportunity for landowners and the Watercress Way to make a real difference to non-motorised connectivity between Alsford and Kingsworthy. We are now awaiting replies from landowners.
Helping hand onto the property ladder. Winchester residents are being helped onto the property ladder by the Council's Shared Ownership Homes Scheme, decreasing the price of a mortgage and rent. 60 homes within Winchester City Council's Stanmore development, The Valley, have been taken up in shared ownership agreements. The scheme allows people to buy a share of a property, meaning a smaller mortgage and deposit, and pay subsidised rent on the remaining share. The aim of the project is to help first-time buyers or people returning to home ownership get onto the property ladder. The council has allocated almost half of the properties at its upcoming Winnell and North Whiteley developments, another 60 homes in total, for sale through shared ownership. Catherine Hamer switched from renting in Winchester to a shared ownership property in the valley after needing more space for her family. Catherine said, "There was no way that we would have been able to afford to rent the house we needed or to buy a property either in Winchester, but we had enough of a deposit saved to apply for a shared ownership scheme for a two-bedroom new build apartment. Shared ownership has been life-changing for us, because otherwise we would have had to rent somewhere cheaper, change jobs or move to a different location, and then we probably would have never been able to save up for a mortgage to buy a property. Getting a mortgage from a bank was difficult, but with the rest of the steps we were guided easily by Council Officer Kate and our financial advisor Becky. There's no harm in trying to apply. We are really glad that we did." The shared ownership properties form part of the council's plan to provide 1,000 new homes by 2030. Under the council's Homes for All target, all new council homes, affordable rent and shared ownership homes are being built to high design and environmental standards. Cabinet Member for Community and Housing, Councillor Paula Ferguson, said, "It's really heartwarming to hear that families like Catherine's are able to continue living in our district thanks to Winchester City Council's shared ownership scheme. It just goes to show how important it is to provide access to a range of housing options so that people of all ages and incomes have the chance to access affordable housing. The homes at the Valley are lovely homes, and it's great to hear what a difference they can make to residents like Catherine."
Cress tops the menu at Village Festival. A Hampshire market town is preparing to welcome back its annual festival, which celebrates the beginning of the watercress season. The Alsford Watercress Festival will be back on Sunday, May the 21st. With the town streets filling up with stalls and more than 15,000 visitors. The event traditionally takes place on the third Sunday of May as a celebration of the national watercress season beginning, with Alsford being pegged as the capital of watercress. For the 19th edition of the event, the organisers have invited famous British chef Mark Hicks, MBE, who runs the Oyster and Fish House in Lyme Regis. Mr. Hicks said, "I love watercress. Its peppery kick is great to add to pretty much any recipe, and it's so good for you too. There's nothing better than freshly harvested British watercress, and I can't wait to show festival goers what can be done with it. I'm also judging the Watercress Food Awards, where I will get a chance to see how some of Hampshire's best artisanal producers are using watercress in their products and choose the most innovative. The festival promises more than 140 stalls, offering an array of drinks, food and wares from various crafts. Guests include chefs, nutritionists and health experts who are set to share the benefits of the Hampshire and Dorset-originated superfood. Visitors will also be able to ride the historical steam railway, the Watercress Line, which supplied fresh watercress to London in Victorian times. One of the biggest attractions proves to be the World Watercress Eating Championships, where contestants attempt to get 80 grams of watercress, attempt to eat 80 grams of watercress as quickly as they can. Oldsford resident Glenn Walsh has taken the top spot for 14 years in a row. Besides parking charges, the festival is free to attend, with complimentary bags of watercress and samples of watercress smoothies or pesto available. This year, visitors are being asked to donate to the children's cancer charity Abbey's Heroes and to teenagers and young adults wards at Southampton General Hospital.
Watercress Line veterans mark 50-year milestone. A group of the original volunteers who helped to rebuild the Watercress Line following the closure of the railway in 1973 have commemorated its 50th anniversary. Around 50 volunteers gathered at Oldsford Station, where one of the last locomotives to run on the line, Hampshire Unit Number 1125, was on display at the platform to commemorate this special occasion with a photograph. The last Hampshire unit departure from the station was at 8:21 p.m. on February the 4th, 1973. 50 years later, to the day, the horn was sounded at 8:21 p.m. to mark the historic occasion. Many of the Watercress Line volunteers who helped ensure the preservation of the railway after it was closed by the British Railways in 1973 took the opportunity to recall their memories of the early restoration activities. These accounts will be recorded for the Watercress Line's archives and used at historical events. The Hampshire unit was on display at Oldsford, and the guests enjoyed relating tales of their work on the The guests enjoyed relating tales of their work on the line to restore it to the heritage railway attraction it has become today. Watercress Line CEO Amanda Squires said, "It was such a pleasure to welcome many of the longest serving volunteers to the Watercress Line to mark this historic milestone in the railway's history. The enthusiasm and pleasure that these dedicated volunteers still feel for the Watercress Line was very touching. Without their hard work, pulling together to help restore the line and its locomotives to their former glory, we would not have such a wonderful piece of railway heritage to share with the present-day visitors and future generations. On behalf of the Watercress Line, I would like to thank everyone who has contributed to the restoration of our much-loved railway." And there's a picture of the Unit 1125 train and all of the volunteers in front of it.
School trip to Winchester. Children from Itchen Abbas Primary School visited the House of Commons. The Foxes class, made up of Year 5 and Year 6 students, made the trip up to Westminster with teachers as well as some parent helpers. The group had a tour of the Palace of Westminster on January the 31st before meeting up with Winchester MP Steve Brine for a chat over lunch. Mr. Brine said, "Itchen Abbas is a lovely rural school and the children seemed to really enjoy their visit to Parliament. They asked what is the best part of my job. And the truthful answer is, when I'm in Westminster I love having school visits. Their sense of wonder at seeing the old place is great to see. And there's a photograph here accompanying this article of the group of children, about sort of 19 or 20, I would think, with some teachers and, of course, Steve Bryant, MP, on the London embankment in front of the river. And I can just see across the river is St Thomas's Hospital.
Heritage buses back on streets. The Winchester-based Friends of King Alfred Buses has confirmed details of its popular original King Alfred Buses running day in and around the city on May the 1st. A 1929 Leyland Lion single-decker will head the lineup of a dozen traditional King Alfred buses. They will all be giving rides over the old King Alfred routes, in company with a wide range of heritage buses and coaches from other local operators. Free bus services will operate on Winchester Broadway and the St Catherine's Park and Ride car park between approximately 9 a.m. and 4:30 p.m, covering most of the traditional King Alfred routes. There will also be a static display of historic vehicles, and there's a lovely picture of an old King Alfred bus back on the city streets.
City takes centre stage for shooting of The Crown. A hit Netflix show based on the lives of the royal family has once again been filming in Winchester. College Street was closed for 2 days as The Crown continues shooting for its sixth series, using Winchester as its set for the second time in a month. On Monday morning, production company Left Bank Pictures filmed a group of young men walking from Winchester College, with the venue previously being used as a substitute for Eton College. The group of actors wore rugby tops and a casual wear, with one holding a blue, white, striped, old-fashioned shopping bag, while high-fiving another. Extras also lined the pavements, ready to walk in the background of the shot. The sixth series is set to pick up from 1997, and therefore cover Prince William's time at Eton. The Chronicle got shots of some of the film crew and extras on set before being told to put their phone away while filming was in progress. The street was previously used for The Crown back in September for scenes of Prince William's first day at Eton, featuring stars Dominic West as Charles, his son Seanan West as Prince William, and Elizabeth Debicki as Diana. College Street was closed to vehicles from 8 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. on Monday and Tuesday, whilst pedestrians were only allowed to pass through between filming. The road has been cleared of any vehicles apart from a few older cars featuring in the scenes. Meanwhile, white trucks were stationed along College Walk, with the front vehicle having a sign labelled The Crown in its window. Businesses along the road have remained open as usual, despite the drop in business, with customers telling staff they had to fight security to get there. P&G Wells manager Steve Scully said he's not against the filming at all. He added, "I don't think the filming is good or bad for business. They've used College Street before, and unless you know this street very well, you probably won't know this is going on." Gabriella Burnett, 23, from Poland, was trying to get through the area when she was stopped by security while filming was in progress. She said, "I didn't know it was for The Crown, but I know the show is really popular. It's really good Winchester is being included because it's such a nice place. It's quite cold having to wait here though. I'd rather be getting on." And there are pictures in the article of a lineup of the trucks in College Walk and the P&G's Wells manager, Steve Scully.
Rare public airing for art treasures. A school has opened its treasury to the public for an exclusive watercolours exhibition. Winchester College's current exhibition, Views of Nature, features some never exhibited before pieces dating back as early as the 16th century. The exhibition is open to the public at the Treasury, accessible through the Porter's Lodge on College Street every day from 2 until 4 p.m. until March the 31st. The exhibition team welcomed college pupils and staff to a private viewing of the 35 watercolours which were picked from a collection of 500. Museum manager Suzanne Kirog-Hughes said, "It's very important that we share our treasures with the local community and further afield. This is the largest exhibition of watercolours we have had for more than 50 years. Most of the pieces in the collection were donated to the school by former students."
Council taken to task over public loos. The condition of public toilets in Winchester received criticism at a recent council cabinet meeting. Former city councillor Ian Tate said that the issues had been raised by the market traders and visitors over Christmas. In the minutes of the January the 25th meeting, it said, "Mr. Tate raised concerns about the general poor condition of the public conveniences in Winchester town. He emphasised the importance of well-maintained facilities and suggested that some of the additional income generated by the success of the street markets be used for their improvements." Julian Perkins of Hyde Gate also spoke to the committee, saying that he was disappointed with the access to the facilities at Abbey Gardens and St Morris's Covert. The minutes said, "As a user of a mobility scooter, Mr Perkins had recently visited the disabled access public conveniences at both St Morris's Covert and Abbey Gardens and had found them to be lacking in terms of cleanliness or availability of running water to wash hands." On behalf of the council, Councillor Martin Todd apologised to Mr Perkins for his experience and confirmed that various actions were being taken to address the situation as a priority.
Zoo headcount up and running. Staff at Marwell Zoo have dusted off their clipboards, dug out their click counters and sharpened their pencils ahead of its annual animal audit. The job of counting every species in the zoo takes place at the start of each year and is a requirement of its licence. These animal audits are conducted at zoos throughout the country and help to give a bigger picture of conservation efforts in UK zoos. In total, Marwell counted 138 species, including 18 invertebrate species, 13 fish, 2 amphibians, 17 reptiles, 31 birds and 57 mammals. The huge task of coordinating the collection of this data was overseen by Zoo Registrar Debbie Pearson, who is responsible for keeping track of everything living in the zoo. Debbie said, "We keep track of animals throughout the year, if they go to other collections and of course when we have new arrivals, but the audit is a chance to take stock of everything living at the zoo. On that one specific day each year, it's an important part of our zoo licensing agreement." And then there's a lovely picture of zookeeper Amy Denny counting wallabies as part of the annual audit.
Extinction Rebellion signs single out MP. Members of Extinction Rebellion, XR, installed 30 blue plaques across Winchester as part of a nationwide protest. The group is protesting against MPs who voted against proposed amendments to the Environment Bill in 2021 that would have tightened regulations on water companies contributing to pollution in waterways. The plaques read, and there's a lovely picture actually of this plaque that I'm looking at now. The plaques read, "Steve Brine, Winchester MP, voted to block a law requiring water companies to dump less raw sewage in our waterways and seas on the 20th October 2021. Extinction Rebellion cited recent incidents such as sewage dumped into the River Itchen last year and a parliamentary committee report describing a chemical cocktail polluting rivers as evidence that more government action was needed. A spokesperson for XR Winchester said, "We've watched in horror as our rivers and seas have become open sewers since October 2021, when our own MP, Steve Brine, voted down a proposal to stop water companies pumping waste directly into our rivers. These plaques shine a light on the government's failure to protect our waterways."
New support for homeless. A company has been appointed to provide accommodation and support for adults who are homeless or imminently at risk of homelessness in Winchester. In partnership with Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council, A2 Dominion will deliver social inclusion support and housing within Winchester City from April. The scheme will provide accommodation and 24-hour intensive support for 25 adults looking to move into independent housing. Jo Evans, Director of Specialist Housing at A2 Dominion, said, "Excellent quality supported housing and support services are crucial and needed more than ever. They provide a safe, stable and supportive place to live and can be key to unlocking better outcomes. I'm delighted to be working with Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council to provide vital supported accommodation to those experiencing homelessness. This opportunity will offer £326,000 per year to deliver this service. The group provides affordable private and social rented homes, temporary accommodation across the UK, and supported housing and homes for vulnerable people. Last month, in January, Shelters figures estimated that 58 people were homeless in Winchester on any night in 2022, including 16 children. The charity estimates that this was equivalent to one in every 2,198 people in the area. The figures were reached using government statistics for Freedom of Information requests and data from the membership charity Homeless Link.
Offsetting last resort. Winchester City Council has confirmed it will only use carbon offsetting as a last resort. Carbon offsetting has been discussed by civic chiefs to help achieve the council's carbon neutrality targets of 2024. At the cabinet meeting on January the 25th, members were urged to seek alternative ways of reducing carbon emissions. Councillor Malcolm Wallace, who represents the Green Party, said, "I have reservations over using the budget to offset carbon emissions. We need to cut our emissions as fast as we can." Councillor Kelise Lerney replied, "Buying carbon credits is very much a last resort."
And the final item, a seaside jaunt as Hampshire's Banksy strikes. A Hampshire-based street artist has expanded his social commentary territory by creating two pieces of art in Kent. Hendog, dubbed Hampshire's Banksy, has struck again, but this time along a beach in Dover, with two pieces titled Trapped Between Borders to create awareness of the Ukrainian refugee crisis. And the two pictures, the pictures of them in the paper, one of a little boy walking along holding a very battered suitcase, and then another picture of him sitting somewhat disconsolately on this suitcase. So they're very nice to see. Hendog, you know, the graffiti artist, is well known for painting murals for hospitals, food pantries, and creating social commentary pieces on subjects such as suicide, homelessness, and the cost of living crisis. He has several famous pieces locally, including a teddy bear along St Cross Road and a girl with a flower in the city centre. And among his other works in the city are Kev, the big issue seller, who I'm sure everybody knows, at the bus station, and a boy with a kite on St Catherine's Hill. That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, John Richards.
Goodbye.
Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And a very big thank you to Matt Rooks-Taylor, who we've welcomed as a guest reader today, and maybe we'll see him again sometime.
Thank you for having me on. Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.